cheer the great pumpkin rises out of the pumpkin patch that he thinks is the most sincere. He's got to pick this one. He's got to. I don't see how a pumpkin patch can be more sincere than this one.
It is almost time for the Great Pumpkin to visit. Halloween is just a few weeks away. Pumpkin patches in Wisconsin are open. Pumpkins adorn the grocery stores and farmers markets, and pumpkin treats are showing up at the local coffee shops and other places. I enjoyed a pumpkin scone the other day. I passed on the pumpkin spiced latte, though. Some of my coworkers are fans of that. Since pumpkins abound this month and some of us have a taste for things pumpkin, we thought we would talk about cooking with pumpkins. What can we make with them in addition to the famous pumpkin pie? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, October the 7th. Who loves pumpkins and pumpkin treats and other foods made with pumpkins, sweet and savory? What do you enjoy or make with pumpkins? And what questions do you have for our guest, who is a cooking with pumpkin expert? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we have provided plenty of links to sources about cooking with pumpkins on Facebook and on our website. Michael Crondall is a food historian and author of The Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook, and he has a brand new cookbook out, Sweet Invention, A History of Dessert. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. I love your intro, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. I love your cookbooks. This is great. You're going to be on Weekend Edition, probably on Sunday morning, talking about Sweet Invention, so listeners can hear more about that, too. And we'll probably talk about some pumpkin desserts as we go along. Let's talk first, though, about how you became interested in cooking with pumpkin. This Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook is not brand new, but why did you decide to devote a cookbook to pumpkins?
Well, because pumpkins are just adorable. Ultimately, that's kind of what drew me to it, was that, I would go to the farmer's market and I would see piles of pumpkins. And also when I traveled, I think it all started actually when I was in the south of France. And maybe 10 years ago, we were on a trip, and we were in Provence, and it was the fall. And I went to the big market. You know, you think Provence, you think tomatoes, you think, I don't know, summer. But we were there in the fall, and there were these giant piles of pumpkins, big pumpkins, little pumpkins, cut-up pumpkins. And every restaurant we went to had some sort of a pumpkin dish. And I thought, why don't we do that? Why do we just have, you know, pumpkin muffins and pumpkin pie? It seemed like there was literally a world of pumpkins out there, you know, set to be explored.
Yeah, is the pumpkin catching on a little more in this country?
In the United States, I think it is. And, you know, of course, the irony of that is, right, it's our native child, our native, whatever you want to call it.
Pumpkins
are from here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as if, you know, we exported them, and people in India, people in Africa, people in Europe seem to do more with them than we do. But I do think that's changing. I see pumpkin soup fairly commonly these days. Pumpkin muffins are very common. What else did I see the other day that was sort of unusual? I think I saw some pumpkin marshmallows.
Pumpkin marshmallows.
So yes, I think we're expanding beyond that relatively narrow pumpkin pie ghetto that we seem to have.
Yeah. They are indigenous, as you mentioned, and this is this a fruit or a vegetable?
Yes.
All right. So did the Native Americans did use this fruit or vegetable?
They absolutely did. I mean, botanically, I guess you could call it a fruit because it is a seed-bearing pod, but, you know, a cucumber is a fruit by that definition, too. But the thing about a pumpkin is, unlike a cucumber, you can make it as a fruit or as a vegetable. You can go sweet or you can go savory, and you can't say that for a lot of produce out there.
Mm-hmm. And it became, famous for making pumpkin pie. We all have made or have tried pumpkin pie, but now you say it is that we're branching out.
We are branching out. We are branching out, and I do think it's that. Oddly enough, you know, it's it's our child comes home. The prodigal pumpkin comes home, and we are now discovering other ways of cooking this thing that's been growing, in a sense, in our backyard for all these years.
Well, what's the last thing you made with pumpkin?
What is the last thing I made with pumpkin? I'm trying to think. I think the last thing was I made a cheesecake with pumpkin.
Really? Tell us how you did that.
Well, it's a more or less a standard, quote-unquote, New York-style cheesecake, meaning that it's made with cream cheese. And there is actually a recipe in my book, but it's roughly, say, two parts cream cheese, one part canned pumpkin in this particular case. And we should actually talk about what kind of pumpkin to cook with in a moment.
Yeah.
But some canned pumpkin in this particular case, or you can make your own homemade puree. And I think I spiked it with some amaretto just to give it a little bit of interest.
Mm. Yeah, well, the pumpkin that I pick up at the pumpkin patch down the road that most people make jack-o'-lanterns out of, is that something I can cook with or not?
No.
Oh, darn. So what is the cooking
right.
pumpkin?
This is, I think, the big misconception people have, that they see these pretty little pumpkins, they carve them up, and they say, well, what else can I do with them? So I'll make them into pumpkin pie. They make a pumpkin pie out of the thing, and it tastes like nothing.
Why? Right? I mean, so it's just a different variety that is not meant.
Well, there's a couple of things mm-hmm. that are going on. First of all, and one reason I think that pumpkins are taking off as a cooking ingredient rather than just, you know, a decorative item for the holidays, or the holiday, I should say, is that I'm seeing a lot more so-called cheese pumpkins, not only at farmers markets, but in certain grocery stores, usually high-end ones or specialty ones. But what you want for cooking is a cooking pumpkin. Pumpkins are grown for all sorts of reasons. They're grown primarily to be decorative. So those jack-o'-lantern pumpkins, you know, the big sort of round ones, the big orange ones,
mm-hmm.
they specifically have been developed to be thin fleshed, so they're easy to carve, round, so they're pretty, and orange, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what they're meant for. And they make a great jack-o'-lantern. You can hollow it out and put things in it. You could make it into a soup container. It's a great container. It's lousy to cook with.
But cheese pumpkin is the one we want.
Cheese pumpkins are one of those, well, Wisconsin, you should know about cheese pumpkins.
Right? You know, we didn't until we looked it up yesterday.
So. This should be the national fruit/vegetable of Wisconsin, the cheese pumpkin. So there are these big tanned things. They basically look like a squat, regular old jack-o'-lantern pumpkin, but they're kind of the color of butternut squash, and that's not a coincidence because butternut squash was actually developed from these cheese pumpkins or a kind of cheese pumpkin. So if you're really stuck, a butternut squash is actually fairly close to a cheese pumpkin in flavor. So if you want to make a pumpkin pie, you would do better to use a butternut squash than a jack-o'-lantern pumpkin.
And is that the only kind of cooking pumpkin?
No, there's other ones around. There's something like 60 or 70 varieties of pumpkins grown in this country of like different types. You know, some people grow pumpkins purely to grow them big, right? There's this like giant pumpkin competition that goes on across the country every fall. And those are one kind of pumpkin. Then there's all the various kinds of cooking pumpkin. The other cooking pumpkin that's quite common is something called a pie pumpkin, or sometimes known as a sugar pumpkin. And these look just like your regular old jack-o'-lantern pumpkin, but they're about 2 pounds each instead of about 7 or 8 pounds. So they're, you know, cute and little. But those are good for cooking, too.
And so that's what we want to look for, one of these cooking pumpkins.
Right. So you either want a sugar pumpkin, or sometimes they're called, the names are inconsistent, or a pie pumpkin, or one of these cheese pumpkins. And the reason they're called a cheese pumpkin is they kind of look like a wheel of Gouda or something like that.
And we can just pop one of these cooking pumpkins in the oven like we would a squash and just cook it that way?
You can, you know, a pumpkin is a squash. There's a squash family, and a pumpkin is a subset of that. You know, cheddar is a cheese, kind of like, on other cheeses. A pumpkin is a squash like other squashes. It has certain characteristics. It's a little bit more watery than other kinds of squash. And because it's a little bit more watery, if you do bake it and then want to make it into a puree, you have to puree it first and then let it drain for a couple of hours. And you'll notice that it gets much denser. When Libby's, who uses more pumpkins than you could,
right,
shake a pumpkin patch at, that's exactly what they do. They drain out the moisture before putting into the can. And that's why when you, for example, take a jack-o'-lantern pumpkin and then just cook it and puree it, it's incredibly watery. But even that cheese pumpkin, it's a little bit on the watery side. So you need to drain it before making it into the equivalent of, Libby's.
Is the pumpkin puree that we make from a cooking pumpkin as good as the Libby's, or better?
It is better. However, I hate to tell people to cheat, but sometimes I do. It is better. But if you are going to be adding a whole lot of spices and flavorings and you name it to it, in the traditional pumpkin pie, you're adding cream and you're adding brown sugar and you're adding, a bunch of spices, the difference is going to be pretty small.
And it's a lot of work. So
it's
maybe
a lot of work. There are certain cases where you want the whole pumpkin to cook with. So I have a recipe. I think you put it on the website. Of a pump where you take one of these cheese pumpkins and you stuff it with cheese and country bread and cream and you bake the whole thing into this kind of yummy, savory casserole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there you need the whole pumpkin, right?
There we go. Let me remind listeners that we are celebrating the pumpkin this hour. We're talking about cooking with pumpkins, and we welcome your questions for our guest expert or your suggestions. What do you bake or make with pumpkins? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we have indeed posted some recipes using pumpkins on our Facebook page and our website. It's going to be a mostly sunny day today and mild with a slight chance of rain in the northwest today. Highs will be in the mid-70s to low 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 21 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, October the 7th. Coming up in our next hour, we will talk with a guest who is concerned about the future of music education in our schools and has some ideas to rejuvenate music education, and we'll talk about them coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we are talking about pumpkins. This is a pumpkin-inspired edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. Normally, during this hour every week, I ask you to tell me about something fun to do in Wisconsin, an event or a festival or things happening in the state. Once in a while, I ask you to tell me a great place to go to get something good to eat. And today we are going to ask you, tell me what to make with pumpkins. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Since pumpkins are everywhere this time of year and we're in a pumpkin sort of mood, we are talking with an expert, a cooking expert. Michael Crondall is a food historian and the author of The Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook. And he's giving us some information and advice about cooking with pumpkins. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. My producer, director Rob Ferret, has been bragging about making pumpkin bread and other pumpkin things. He likes to bake with fresh pumpkin. And his favorite part is the seeds. Can you give us some tips on great pumpkin seeds, Michael?
I hesitate a little bit giving advice on pumpkin seeds, and here's why. In the same way that pumpkins are grown especially for being decorative or for stuffing, for cooking, other pumpkins are grown specially for their seeds. So those nice big pumpkin seeds that, for example, you sometimes get in Mexican cooking, Those are grown from yet another kind of a pumpkin that's really? Grown, particularly for their seeds. In the south of Austria, they grow pumpkins specially for the oil. And if you ever can track it down, it's a little bit exotic, but pumpkin oil has this wonderful, wonderful kind of toasted flavor that's terrific on salads, on other sorts of things. You don't want to cook with it. It's much too dense for that. But it's got this sort of wonderful green color and toasted flavor. You can toast the seeds of a regular pumpkin, but you won't get much bang for your buck in terms of how much there actually is, because the seeds are quite small. But, of course, you know, drying them out and seasoning them with some sort of a savory mixture of chili pepper and black pepper and salt, and then roasting them in about a 350-degree oven will work. But this is one situation where I almost rather go out and buy the pumpkin seeds and do something.
Oh, really? Yeah, because I've made pumpkin seeds from the jack-o'-lantern pumpkin and never really successfully, but it was.
Well, that's why. Mm-hmm. That's why. It's partially because those seeds aren't really grown for that.
Mm-hmm. But you can try and spice them up. We have a number of callers, so let's go to Greg in Wapaka first. Hello, Greg.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Very good. Are you a pumpkin fan?
Oh yes, very much so.
Yeah, well, what's your question or comment?
My wife makes a pumpkin pie cake with cream cheese frosting, and she actually won a contest at our church recently for it.
Well, congratulations. I bet you it's a favorite of yours.
It is. I usually only get it on my birthday, but now I got it twice this year, so I was very happy.
So tell us a bit what it's like to eat a pumpkin pie cake.
It tastes like fall. And I don't know how to explain that, but it's just it's not so sweet and rich as it, like a chocolate cake. It's just, it's mild and moist and flavorful.
And what's in it? Or is that a family secret?
No, it's actually from Cooking Light magazine.
Oh.
And they take recipes and they just kind of reduce the fat content or calories a little bit by doing certain things to it, but it doesn't take any of the flavor away. They kind of play with the recipe and make it just as yummy as it was originally, but take some of the unhealthiness out of it.
Well, that's great. And so it's not like you're eating something with pie consistency. It tastes like pumpkin, but it's cake consistency?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, anything similar to that in your book, Michael?
There are things. I have a roll cake in my book, which is a pumpkin roll cake that you fill with a caramel cream filling. But I don't have a sort of a layer cake, although you could probably bake it, bake my roll cake in a layer pan.
Well, Greg, thanks. We'll check out Cooking Light magazine for that. That's wonderful. And congratulations to your wife. I love how he said that it tastes like fall.
And I think we should add that pumpkin is really good for you.
Yeah, it's very healthy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it has tons of, I guess it's mostly A vitamins and so on, but I don't want to recommend pumpkin pie as a health food, but it's probably a lot better for you than a brownie.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that is. You can make it healthier, I suppose, if you cut down on fats and sugars if you're adding it to it, but it is a healthy food. Dick in La Crosse. Hello, Dick.
Hi. I'm wondering if a person had... like I make a bran muffin, which I make a big batch and use it for a week. Could a person put just put pumpkin in it? Mostly I use whole wheat flour, a little bit of white flour. And the other thing would be, like, someone makes zucchini bread, could they just substitute pumpkin for the zucchini, that sort of thing?
The answer is yes, yes, and yes.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the zucchini bread, you can probably just substitute one for one. You could either grate it or you could fold in the pumpkin puree. When it comes to the bran muffins, you may have to play with the moisture content a little bit because pumpkin will add moisture to the mix. So you may want to try it with a half a cup and see what happens, then 3/4 of a cup and see what happens because it could get soggy.
Okay.
Or you may have to up slightly the quantity of flour. The proportions get a little bit more complicated there.
It'll be fun to try.
Yeah, Dick, thanks very much for the idea. You know, this is a related a little bit off topic, but another health benefit apparently of canned pumpkin, and I didn't know this, and I'm sure your own homemade puree could have the same thing. Veterinarians, I've heard two of them recommending to their pet owners to feed their animals canned pumpkin to give them more fiber. Did you know that?
Wow. No, this is new for me.
I know. There you go. Another use for your pumpkin. Here's an email from Nick in Milwaukee. I've found one super delicious recipe for mini pumpkins, a vegan root vegetable cassolette from Alicia Silverstone. Can you suggest any others, especially for dessert?
Well, but this presumably would have been a savory version, right? I'm guessing, but I would imagine it would have been the beans cooked with a pumpkin to make a kind of a casserole. Sweet-wise, usually the pumpkins are pureed. There are some recipes where, for example, there's old versions. Pumpkins, one of the things I discovered when I was doing research for Sweet Invention, my more recent book, was how old the pumpkin pie recipe is. And pumpkin pies go back to England, actually. But the early pumpkin pies, because what happened was that, you know, they found the pumpkins in the New World, they brought them back to the Old World. But they would make a pumpkin apple pie. And there, instead of the pumpkin being pureed, it'd be chunky. So they would sort of have apples, pumpkins, enclose it in a crust and cook it that way. Which I've done, and it's very tasty and kind of surprising because people think a pumpkin pie being one thing, and this turns out to be something else.
We will continue talking about cooking with pumpkins, baking with pumpkins, and welcoming your questions and your suggestions. What have you discovered? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. First, we'll check the latest news. We are talking with a guest this hour who says there is more than one way to cook a pumpkin, and we're talking about many of them this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:36 on this Friday, October the 7th. We are talking with the author of The Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook, Michael Crondall. He's a food historian, and he also has a new book out. It's Sweet Invention, A History of Dessert. So maybe we'll talk a little bit more about pumpkin desserts, but we are talking about pumpkin dishes, sweet and savory, during this hour and welcoming your questions and your suggestions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And on Facebook and on our website, we have included a recipe for a roasted pumpkin stuffed with bread and cheese from our guests. So check that out. Let's go back to the phones, and Tim in Waukesha is with us next. Hello, Tim.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Great. Neat show, and I think that your guest has really hit on a terrific part of cooking. Just wanted to point out that the role of pumpkin and pumpkin seeds in Hispanic cooking, you know, old, New World cooking, is very, very long and old. And the way to use pumpkin seeds, like in chili and so forth, a lot of people miss that. But also to take, if people like pumpkin seeds, you know, at Halloween time, think about every time you do squash, scoop those seeds out, do them the same way you do them in the oven, you know, to dry them out and spice them up a little bit. They're far, far better than pumpkin seeds. So that's my comment.
Thanks very much, Tim. How about your comment, Michael? Oh, darn. All right, now you're on the air.
Okay. He's absolutely right. Pumpkin seeds are used tons, particularly in Mexican cooking. They're, for example, pureed into sauces, and they make this sort of luscious green sauce that is put on, you know, various things like chicken, turkey, and so on. So, I mean, yes.
Yes, it's, and it sounds like you've got some action going.
Well, I'm in New York City. What can I tell you?
There we go. Jim in Durand is with us next. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, pumpkins are one of my favorite things to grow and cook. I do a lot of stuff with them. One of the things I really like to do is make a stew where you kind of make a beef stew, and then you hollow out the pumpkin, and you put the stew into the pumpkin, and then you chuck the pumpkin in the oven and bake it, and then when you're done, you pull it out and you eat the stew and the pumpkin all at the same time. I sometimes use venison for that. Another thing I like to do is I make a pumpkin chocolate chip bread. That's kind of a Christmas thing, and all my friends love to get that for Christmas presents.
And I expect one too, Jim.
What's that?
Never mind.
I can get you one. No problem.
I'm just teasing.
We're just putting in orders.
we will get you one of those. The other thing I like to do is I do a lot of dehydrating, so I take the pumpkins and I peel the skin off, pull the seeds out, and then I cut up into chunks and I throw it in the dehydrator. And then, too, when I make soups and stews, instead of, like, putting potatoes and things like that in the stew, I just throw, several handfuls of dehydrated pumpkin, and then it recooks, and that's also really tasty. So, I love to cook with pumpkins all sorts of different ways.
Jim, wow, you are providing competition for our guest for pumpkin expert here.
The more the merrier.
Yeah. Well, you know, just a little story. I mean, when I was a kid, I always wanted to cook my jack-o'-lantern, and my mom thought that was really weird. So now that I'm adult, I get to play the way I want.
So, Jim, just tell me, I mean, how did you discover that you wanted to dehydrate pumpkin and use it later in soups?
I'm really kind of historical sort of a buff, and I found out, you know, that pumpkins were a major food of the early pioneers, and they preserved them by drying. So I just thought, well, let's see if they used to dry it. You know, I'll try it. And I have, like, recipe books, like, from the Civil War and all these old-fashioned recipes. I just like to play with those. So that's kind of how I did that.
Wow, and having a venison stew inside of a pumpkin, Michael, can you top that?
Nope. But I want to be invited for the next one.
Yes. Okay, I will do that.
All right, thank you very much, Jim. And that I certainly have heard of pumpkin chocolate chip muffins and breads, though. Putting a little bit of chocolate, never heard anything, I say.
So, right.
Thank you very much.
Even that venison stew, we could throw in a little bit of chocolate.
Yeah. Well, you know, and we've talked, maybe you can talk a little bit more about using pumpkin. I have found, well, squash anyway, I'm not sure pumpkin in Thai food, in like a mixed vegetable dish. I thought that was interesting, having big hunks of squash in that. You can really use it in that kind of dish as well, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And if you go to a place like India, they will cook it, you know, I don't want to call it a curry exactly, but it's some sort of a spiced kind of a vegetable dish that's cooked with spices and ginger and so on. The tricky with cooking a pumpkin is you either want to go all the way to a puree, or you want to cook it while it still has its, you know, while it's still not falling apart, because there's that kind of in between point where it's half mushy and half hard that's not very good. But if it's still got some texture to it, it's great. So you have to be a little bit careful in the way you mix it, typically, because it's easy to mash up. But pretty well anything you can do with a squash, you can do with a pumpkin, because it is, you know, it is a squash.
Yeah. Are there other things, as a food historian, that you can mention about how we used to use pumpkins and how we might be able to, you know, incorporate more of them today?
Well, you know, I was trying to figure out what the origin of apple pie that we think of as apple pie, which is basically a custard, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a custard that is eggs, cream, and pumpkin baked in a pastry shell, because the chunky pumpkin pie seems to be much older. This idea of cooking, like I said, the apples and the pumpkins together seems to go back, I don't know, 16th, maybe 17th century or so. And I was looking at these 18th century English cookbooks, No pumpkin pie in those, or no pumpkin custard pie in those, mm-hmm. at any rate. But what you find is things like pureed chestnuts cooked into a custard, or pureed yams cooked into a custard, and then baked in a pastry shell. The first honest-to-goodness creamy pumpkin pie recipe comes from an American source. So it's, you know, whether it was invented in the United States or not, I don't know, but certainly the first recipe for a creamy-type pumpkin pie cooked in an open pie shell seems to date back to about the 1790s to a writer by the name of Amelia Simmons.
Mm.
They used to call those custards in those days, by the way. It used to be called a baked custard, but you would still cook it in a pie shell.
And this is information that's in your latest book, A History of Dessert.
Yeah,
very neat, very neat. And Michael Crandall will be talking about his new book, Sweet Invention, A History of Dessert, on Weekend Edition Sunday, heard here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's on our NPR News and Classical Music service. He is talking with us today about using or cooking with pumpkins in desserts and in other dishes. He is also the author of The Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook. And we're welcoming your questions for him about cooking or baking with pumpkins, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you cook with pumpkin? Do you have a favorite pumpkin recipe or dish? Join in. Checking our weather forecast for today, it is going to be mostly sunny and mild, especially in southern and eastern Wisconsin, turning cloudy and windy with a slight chance of rain in the northwest. Highs today from the mid-70s to the low 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is about 13 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Friday, October the 7th. And we are celebrating the pumpkin during pumpkin season in Wisconsin. Lots of pumpkin patches are open for you to choose your future jack-o'-lantern. And lots of pumpkins are at the farmers' markets and grocery stores. We are talking about what to do with pumpkins besides carve them, and how we can use cooking pumpkins in a lot of different dishes, not just pumpkin pie. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are getting some ideas and inspiration from him and from you, too. Lots of pumpkin experts out there. Our next caller is Jason in Waukesha. Hello, Jason.
Good morning, Joy, to you and your guests.
Good morning.
I heard you ask Michael about roasting pumpkin seeds, and I just wanted to give, because it's always been a tradition with our family, I just wanted to give our family secret, and that is after you put all the seeds in the colander, rinse them all out, put them in a big mixing bowl, and brine them in a salt water for about a half an hour, and then, you know, drain them back again in the colander, then throw them on the pan, toast them up, and then when they come out there, they have that nice salty crust on them.
Oh, so put them in a brine mixture before you do it.
That sounds like a terrific idea.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jason. Give that a try. I might be more successful. Terry in Menasha. Hi, Terry.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have this way of using pumpkins that I really enjoy doing. I like to make lentil soup and pea soup, and I'm always trying to brighten them up because they don't look beautiful. And I hit upon the idea of putting wedges of like a medium-sized pumpkin into the soup, but you've got to watch the texture like he was talking about. You don't want it to fall apart. So you cook the soup first, and then you push the peeled wedges down into the soup, and you cook it gently so you don't break them. And then it makes it really gorgeous. I like to use those beluga lentils you can get at the, Outpost from Milwaukee or somewhere, and which are very, very dark. And it with the bright pumpkin in it is just gorgeous, and it gives a beautiful additional texture to it that's really, it just makes it a really great dish. I always look forward to pumpkins for that use.
That also sounds like a great Halloween dish because it's going to be black and orange.
Yes, and I just wanted to mention you can do it with other squash, but pumpkins are the best, and butternut is pretty good. But the shape of those wedges of a medium pumpkin is just beautiful, and yes, it is good for holiday. It's really nice.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for your show.
Oh, thank you so much. What a good idea that is, too. Now, do the various varieties of cooking pumpkins taste very different from each other, Michael?
They very different. Think like tomatoes. You know, tomatoes taste sort of one a little bit different than another one, than one mm-hmm. variety than another one. It's all very, you know, very much in the same family. I would say that the cheese pumpkins have a bit more of a sweeter, more of a butternut squash like flavor, whereas the sugar pumpkins, despite the fact that the sugar pumpkins, I think, are a little less sweet and have more of a flavor that kind of tends towards almost a cucumber kind of flavor. But think just, you know, 2% cucumber, not 50% cucumber. But just have that, because sometimes when you cut open a cucumber, when you cut open a pumpkin, there's this aroma that is cucumber-like, which isn't completely crazy because they are actually very roughly in the same family.
Hmm. Yeah, our assistant talk director, Cynthia Schuster, is in a CSA, community-supported agriculture program, where she gets a big box of food from an area farmer for being a part of this. And she got a cooking pumpkin. She got a little pumpkin, and she said she wasn't sure what to do with it. And she was under the impression that if she wants to make a pie, she should just buy canned pumpkin. And what advice might you have for her in terms of what to do with that little pumpkin?
All right. The best thing to do if you want to make your own homemade puree is to cut the thing in half, scoop out the seeds, and then put it cut side down on some sort of a baking sheet. You can put a little bit of foil on there if you don't want to clean it up afterwards. You can spray it with a little bit of nonstick spray just to make sure it doesn't stick. And then bake it in about a 350 oven until it is super tender. At which point, you want to scoop out the flesh and put it in some sort of a strainer and let it hang out for a couple hours. And then throw it into a food processor blender, and you've got your puree. You can freeze it. You can keep it in the fridge for about a week or so. And it will, you know, it won't taste canned.
All right. Let's say she doesn't want to do the pie, though. She just has this one little cooking pumpkin. What should she make with that for dinner tonight?
Well, the other option is she should peel it. And peeling a pumpkin, you don't want to use a vegetable peeler. It's a little too tricky to use, and the flesh is too hard. What I usually do is I cut the pumpkin into wedges, maybe 2 or 3 inches wide, and then put those wedges cut side down on a cutting board. And then taking a chef's knife or some sort of a heavy knife, I cut straight down to cut away the outside skin.
Oh, I get it.
Much, much safer. And then cut. Oh, I know what she should do with it. Then she dices this up. Okay. Sautés a little bit of onion with a little bit of bacon if she wants in a pan. Throws in this pumpkin. Puts a lid on there. And cooks it until it is just barely tender. Then she cooks up some short pasta, some penne or shells or something like that. And tosses it with this mixture along with some Parmesan cheese. One thing that's become very popular is pumpkin ravioli.
Ooh.
And this, what I just described, is basically the same thing, except that you're not making ravioli. But it has this sort of sweet and savory, very autumn-like flavor. A sprinkle of parsley on there is nice, too.
One last call from Ben and Nina. Hello, Ben.
Hi. I have a few comments. I'll be as quick as I can. One is for cooking pumpkins. I use your trick about putting it on a baking sheet, but instead of using foil or cooking spray, I add about a half inch of water to the bottom of the pan.
I would recommend not doing that, and the reason is that you actually want to evaporate water out of the pumpkin. You want to dry it out
okay.
a little bit because it's already watery.
Okay. Another thing, one of my favorite Garrison Keillor quotes is all about pumpkin pies. He says that the pumpkin pie is the symbol of mediocrity. that the very best pumpkin pie he's ever had wasn't really all that much better than the very worst pumpkin pie he's ever had.
I remember that. He got blasted for that. Was he being unfair to the pumpkin pie, Michael?
Some people don't like pumpkin pie. What can I tell you?
Well, Michael, we really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks very much for being with us.
It was a pleasure.
Michael Crandall is a food historian, author of The Great Little Pumpkin Cookbook, and we appreciate his time and your time, too. It's time for Wisconsin Life. Monday is Columbus Day, but ask some Scandinavians who was the first European to discover America, and they'll tell you that Columbus arrived 500 years ago. 500 years too late to claim that honor. Commentator Eric Dregny tells us about the Nordic explorer behind Sunday's celebration of Leif Erikson Day.
In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, my elementary teacher told us. She also said that Columbus was worried he'd fall off the edge of the world. Of course, this is hogwash. Columbus knew damn well that the world was round. Ptolemy wrote about it in 150 AD, and any sailor could see the curvature of the earth. Besides, Columbus was just following Leif Erikson's lead. My Norwegian-American grandfather always taught me that the Vikings were the first to visit Vineland, which was their word for the new land. Leif Erikson's father, Eric the Red, was banished first from Norway for manslaughter and then from Iceland. He moved further west to an area he called Greenland. The name was a bit of a promotional scheme to convince more settlers to join him in the icy island. His son Leif went a bit further to Vineland, which sounds suspiciously like Wineland. As a kid, I didn't know what to believe. Was it an Italian sailing under the Spanish flag, or an Icelander with Norwegian roots and a cool helmet who first landed in the New World? Besides, isn't this argument just silly, considering that millions of Native Americans were here all along? When I lived in Norway, I found a book that claimed not only did Columbus learn about Leif Erikson's trip when he supposedly lived in Scandinavia in 1477, but also that Columbus was born in Nordfjord, Norway, not Genoa, Italy. If that's true, the Norwegians discovered America not just once, but twice. This gushing Scandinavian pride has led to many dubious claims. My favorite is the Kensington runestone dug up by Swedish immigrants in 1898. Nordic explorers supposedly carved it in 1362 when visiting central Minnesota. New theories about the stone, though, claim these Norsemen were actually Knights Templar, escaping the bubonic plague and possibly carrying the Holy Grail to hide safely in the Midwest. Now that's not a stretch, is it? Suddenly, farmers unearthed all sorts of Viking swords, axes, and in Trempealeau County, Wisconsin, even a spearhead. Proud Scandinavians likely planted authentic 11th-century artifacts purchased by mail order. Every unusual hole in a rock across the Great Lakes was suddenly a mooring stone to anchor the flotilla of Viking ships that couldn't wait to visit Wausau. The problem with all this is that it makes people doubt that the Vikings ever made it here. In fact, we know the Vikings, possibly Leif Erikson, made it to Canada, and they surely explored much further inland. Recent genetic testing in Iceland revealed that an extended family had DNA only found in Native American or East Asian populations. Now, the only logical explanation is that the Vikings made contact and brought their new friend home to Iceland to meet the family. In 1930, Wisconsin became the first state to declare October 9th Leif Erikson Day. And now every president since Lyndon Johnson has declared Leif Erikson Day. It hasn't managed to replace Columbus Day as a national holiday, but that certainly hasn't stopped the Scandinavians from celebrating.
Commentator Eric Dregny is an assistant professor of English at Concordia University in St. Paul. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.